Vidhi Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Namajit Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Jyoti Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Guru. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sthapanaya Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Ji Namah. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauranga Upachani Namaste Sasana. Vande Nam Shri Guru Shri Yutam Padakamam Shri Guru Vaishnavas Chan Shri Rupam Sarakrajatam Sadhana Ravindatam Vitamastam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvaditam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devi Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sadhana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamastam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 August 17, 2009. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 18, Text 43. This is in the chapter of Diti Vows to Kill King Indra. And this is Kasyapa Muni, who's trying to decide what he's going to do after offering his wife a benediction and finding out that she wants to kill Indra. Pratishrutam dadamiti.
Pratishrutam dadamiti.
Vajastan namrsha bhavet. Varam narvati chandropi.
Varam narvati chandropi.
Tatredam upakalpate.
Tatredam upakalpate. Patishrutam
vadamiti.
Patishrutam vadamiti.
Vachastam namrshabhave.
Vachastam namrshabhave.
Varam narvati chandropi.
Varam narvati.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada. I promised to give her a benediction, and this promise cannot be violated, but Indra does not deserve to be killed. In these circumstances, the solution I have is quite suitable. Well, of course, you receive when you make a promise that you're supposed to keep it. So he's thinking, I don't want to break my promise, and yet I don't want to give the results of my promise. So he's trying to find some way where everything can be adjusted. Purport. Kasyapa Muni concluded, Diti is eager to have a son who can kill Indra, since she is a woman after all and is not very intelligent. I shall train her in such a way that instead of always thinking of how to kill Indra, she will become a Vaishnava, a devotee of Krishna. If she agrees to follow the rules and regulations of the Vaishnava principles, the unclean core of her heart will certainly be cleansed, Cheta Dharpana Marjana. This is the process of devotional service. Anyone can be purified by following the principles of devotional service in Krishna consciousness. For Krishna consciousness is so powerful that it can purify even the dirtiest class of men. So nobody should think, I'm so contaminated, I can't become a devotee. And transform them into the topmost Vaishnavas. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement aims at this purpose. So what's the purpose of our movement? Of? Even the dirtiest class of men and turn them into? Topmost Vaishnavas, not just Vaishnavas. Narottama Das Thakur says, Prajendra Nandana Ye Sachi Sutra Hoylam Se Balaram Hailam Nitai. If you're Bengali, I'm sorry, my pronunciation is abominable. Dina Hina Yata Chila Hari Nam Udalila Tarasaki Jagannitai. The appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this Kali Yuga is especially meant to deliver the fallen souls who are always planning something for material enjoyment. Always planning something for material enjoyment. How can I get this enjoyment? How can I get that enjoyment? He gave the people of this age the advantage of being able to chant the Hare Krishna mantra and thus become fully pure, free from all material contamination. Once one becomes a pure Vaishnava, he transcends all material conceptions of life. Thus, Kasyapa Muni tried to transform his wife into a Vaishnavi so that she might give up the idea of killing Indra. He wanted both her and her sons to be purified so that they would be fit to become pure Vaishnavas. Of course, sometimes a practitioner deviates from the Vaishnava principles and there is a chance that he may fall down. So why is Prabhupada mentioning this, do you think, in this context? It applies to us. And why else is he mentioning this in this context? What's the point he's just made up till now?
Anybody can be delivered.
And what's Kasyapa Muni's strategy here?
His wife is fallen.
His wife is
fallen. Assuming that she may not be able to completely come up to the mark.
Okay. His wife is fallen and it may not, yeah.
Take her determination and redirect it.
He's trying to redirect her determination, and so the point here is it might not work. In other words, she might, because Prabhupada is saying right here before this that once one becomes a pure Vaishnava, he's saying become fully pure, free from all material contamination. Once one becomes a pure Vaishnava, he transcends all material conceptions of life. Thus, Kasyapa Muni tried to transform his wife into a Vaishnava. So he was trying to make her into a pure devotee. So he's inserting this to say it might not happen. He might not be successful. He says, of course, sometimes a practitioner deviates from the Vaishnava principles and there is a chance that he may fall down. Do you think Prabhupada there is talking about two different things or the same thing? Sometimes a practitioner deviates from the Vaishnava principles and there is a chance that he may fall down. Okay, it could be cause and effect, that if you deviate, then you fall down. What else could that mean?
But isn't deviating a fall down?
Deviating is a fall down, so it could be two different ways of saying the same thing. Any other thoughts on Prabhupada means here? Of course, sometimes a practitioner deviates from the Vaishnava principles and there is a chance that he may fall down. So it could be, what Prabhupada could mean here is that one causes the other. If you deviate, then you fall down. It could mean that Prabhupada's just saying the same point in two different ways. I was thinking it could also be that deviating is something that you do before you've attained something. And fall down is something that happens once you've attained something. So it could be talking about two different things. Although the other explanations are also possible. Prabhupada said we should examine everything from many, many angles of vision. So I think all of those, I'm sure there's many more meanings. We could probably churn out at least another 20 meanings. So in other words, if I was saying, you know, if you're going from here to the university, you might deviate on your way there. Or once you get there, you could leave. And we've certainly seen both things. We've seen practitioners of Krishna consciousness deviate before they've made really significant advancement. And we've also seen people who've made significant advancement then fall down from that position. We've seen both. As sometimes people assume that if somebody falls, they were never advanced, but that's not necessarily the case. But Kasyapa Muni thought that even if one falls while practicing the Vaishnava principles, he's still not a loser. Even a fallen Vaishnava is eligible for better results, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Svapamapya Sadhamasya Trayate Mahatomavet. Ayet. Even while practicing the Vaishnava principles to a small extent, can save one from the greatest danger of material existence. Thus, Kasyapa Muni planned to instruct his wife Diti to become a Vaishnava because he wanted to save the life of Indra. So how is he calculating this deviation or fall down thing into his idea? How is Kasyapa Muni calculating that? Well, Prabhupada says that Kasyapa Muni is also considering that. He's considering that his plan may not be fully successful. But there's no loss. There's no loss. Even if it's not fully successful, then there'll still be
gain.
There'll still be gain. Whereas materially, if your plan isn't fully successful, often there's no gain. You just have an unfinished building sitting around. You know, you've done half your degree or something like that. It's not worth much. Pratisutam dadamiti vashastana rishabhavit. Vadam narhati chendropi tatre dam upakampate. I promise to give her a benediction, and this promise cannot be violated. But Indra does not deserve to be killed. In these circumstances, the solution I have is quite suitable. So when he's thinking she's going to get some benefit, he's certainly thinking, you know, Prabhupada often says the benefit is that if you have 1% in this life, you'll pick up 2% next life. But we also see even in this life that any degree of Krishna consciousness benefits people. That even if a person only practices one of the regulative principles, even if they just chant on occasion, even if they just visit a temple, even if they just read the book sometimes, that it improves their quality of life even materially. So we can certainly say that even a little bit of Krishna consciousness is very helpful. Someone is not the loser. All right, well, Diti here has this desire to kill a person she imagines to be her enemy. Her two children have been killed by Lord Vishnu, and somehow she's not blaming Lord Vishnu. She's saying Lord Vishnu is neutral, but he was obliged to take the side of Indra. So the real culprit here is Indra. Reminds me of when Arjuna got angry at Jayadrath rather than at the six or seven Maharathis who actually killed Abhimanyu. He first directed his anger at Jayadrath for preventing the other Pandavas from helping. So Diti here is venting her anger at Indra. It's also interesting that she's not venting her anger at her sons, who were demons, you know, or at herself for being in poor consciousness and having conceived demons. So she doesn't take the responsibility that, you know, I'm the one who produced these demoniac sons, nor does she put it on her family members. She finds someone external. So this is, of course, very typical, that when something bad happens to us, we want to find somebody to blame. Even if we blame ourselves, it's usually in some sort of very negative, oh, I'm so good. It's a very mode of ignorance kind of thing. And she's feeling that the way she's going to get rid of her problem, of course her sons are already killed. There's nothing that she can do, really, that's going to solve her problem. But she's thinking, all right, let me at least get vengeance and kill the person who killed my sons. And she didn't feel that she had any means to kill Indra directly. She didn't feel that she had the power. By the way, Indra is her stepson. Indra is the son of her husband and co-wife and sister. Aditi is her co-wife and her sister. And so really, Indra is like one of her own sons. Indra is practically speaking one of her sons. And so just see the mentality of when a person becomes in this demoniac consciousness of friends and enemies, I've got to kill my enemies, I've got to get my enemies out of the way, they'll even become the enemy of their own son. And that's why Prabhupada was talking about that, you know, he's talking about women, but really any materialistic person can become like this. You know, that my family members become my enemy. Let me kill them. And we see, I think, about 50-55% of murders are between intimate family members. So this is, you know, this is the nature of material love. That I love you, I love you, I love you, and okay, now you're in my way, now I'm going to kill you. Anyway, for some reason she didn't feel that she would kill Unruh. Maybe she didn't feel she had the power, maybe she didn't feel it was proper, whatever. And she decided that she'd get a son who would kill Indra, which of course then the son would be Indra's brother. But that was her mentality. And she knew that the way she could do that was to please her powerful husband. So of course she did that, and then he felt, okay, now I'm obliged to do this. So sometimes we have desires that we know are evil. Surely DT knew that this was an evil desire. She's not an ordinary person. You know, she's the daughter of Daksha in his second birth. And she and her sisters are responsible for generating all the various species of life that fill the universe. Notwithstanding Darwin's theory that we all came from a glob and primordial soup, but actually we came from these daughters of Daksha who married Kasyapa. And you'll see in the November, December Back to Godhead, we have a nice article on this with many beautiful paintings showing how Kasyapa's wives gave birth to the lizards and the insects and animals and like that. So she's a very elevated personality, and therefore she knew that what she wanted to do was evil. It was evil from any point of view. It was evil from the fact that she's wanting to kill her own son, that she wants to have her son killed by a brother, that she's blaming Indra for the death of her sons, who she knows very well were demons. She was very aware that her sons deserved to be killed. She knew that from the moment they were conceived. And she knew from the moment they were conceived that they would be killed by Lord Vishnu. It was already, she already knew all this. So she knows that what she wants is evil, but she's not capable of giving up her desire. So sometimes we have this sort of situation, isn't it? We want something that we know is evil, is bad for us. And it may be something very insignificant, like, you know, eating another gulabjamun. One devotee recently in Christchurch told me, we were there for Balaram's appearance day, that one Balaram's appearance day he drank so much Varuni juice, he said that he could neither digest it nor vomit, and he was just sitting there in the bathroom, you know, praying to Krishna, praying to Lord Balaram. So whether it's something like that, you know, whether it's we just really, in this sort of situation, we really want to hurt somebody, and we know that we're not, but we know, you know, one of the offenses is offending devotees, but somehow we just feel we can't stop ourselves, and we just go to the person, and we go to someone else, you know, that's somebody. Yeah, so we're often like this, or we have a desire for something material in this world, and we know, again, that it's harmful. Whether it's a small thing like, you know, going out and renting the latest movie or whatever, or whether it's a big thing like going out and getting intoxicated. And when we have these desires that we don't seem to be able to control, isn't it? We all struggle with this. Some desire we know is evil. It's not even good for us. And even we could say, I don't really want this. And this was, of course, Arjuna's question. He says, why does it feel like I'm forced to do sinful things? So Aditi here, she's doing one good thing. She's being honest about her desire and going to somebody else about it. So often we don't do that. Often with our evil and sinful and nasty or foolish desires, we just keep them to ourselves. And we try to repress them or ignore them or fulfill them in some sneaky way, hoping nobody's going to find out. Whereas here, Diti actually went to her guru, basically, and said, help me with this desire. So what does the Shastra tell us we're supposed to do with these nasty desires? Now, many times we find that the way people deal with nasty desires is one of three ways, as I was just saying. Either they deny that they have them. No, I don't have any nasty desires. Or they try to repress them, which is another kind of denial. Go away, go away, go away. Try to fight them, or they try to sneakily fulfill them. And in fact, generally speaking, if you try to deny them or repress them, you'll end up sneakily fulfilling them. That generally is what happens. Very, 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 very difficult to stop a desire entirely for a very long period of time. It may come out in some strange form. You may be fulfilling the desire in some strange way where you're not even aware that you're trying to fulfill the desire. And other people around you will say, whoa, you know, what is that person doing? What's their motives anyway? What's going on with that person? And you may not even be aware. But the Shastra is giving us another way of dealing with these things. It's saying that whether you have all desires, whether you have no desires, whether you desire liberation, whatever desires you have, what should you do? Go to?
Krishna.
Go to Krishna. And that's what Kasyapa is doing. He's saying, go to Krishna, because materially, if you try to fulfill these desires materially, they'll never be satisfied. So you kill Indra, and then you want to kill Indra's sons, and then you want to kill Vishnu, and then you want to... Right? Especially when we feel wronged. When we feel wronged and we want vengeance, where does it end? You know, you kill somebody, it's not enough. I have to torture them to death. And then after you've tortured them to death, then you have to criticize their name. You know, we find this. We find it, unfortunately, even in ISKCON. You know, people who've criticized some leader, and the leader's now left their body, and you'll see somebody who'll write, oh, good thing they left their body, too bad they didn't suffer too much when they died. And you're like, whoa. You're just never satisfied and burns like fire, these evil, especially this desire to harm another living entity. You know, it goes on and on and on. Again, we see this with devotees who have been found guilty of doing some crime. And often, you know, they've been given their punishment, they're serving their punishment, and people, it's not enough. You got to do this, and you got to do this. So, well, any desire for material things, you never get to the point that you say, okay, now I have it. Now it's all right. So how does spiritual life satisfy these desires? How does taking up Krishna consciousness satisfy these desires? Essentially, the way Krishna consciousness satisfies these desires is, as Prabhupada says, we see the naked form of those desires. We see them for what they are. We see how nasty they are. Now, like, I have certain foods, if I eat them, I'll get sick. I'm allergic to those foods. So even though they're very tasty food, when I look at them, I see what? Pain and disease. I don't see, oh, here's a chunk of cheddar cheese. I see, here's a chunk of pain. And therefore, it doesn't appeal to me. And there's nothing, although it may be very tasty and cooked in a very nice way, I don't have any desire for it. And that way, the desire is fully satisfied. When one sees the naked forms of one's desires, then one is actually satisfied. It's gone. So that's Kasyapa Muni's prescription here. One has to, of course, first be honest about one's desires. One has to be honest. And therefore we find that the great devotees will say things that sound almost like depression sometimes. You know, I'm materialistic, rascal, full of lust. Of course, when that's imitated by someone who's not really honest, it's just repulsive. If someone actually thinks they're a pure devotee and they go around saying, oh, I'm so full, it's like, quiet, please. But someone who's really seeing their own desires, it can speak like that, and in fact, it's quite pleasing. You know, yeah, I'm honest, I have these desires. Krishna, please show me what they really are. Please show me truth. Please put me in the truth. And that way bring me to satisfaction. And the problem, of course, is the materialistic people think the only way I can get my desire satisfied is to get it in the way that I want. You know, what is Diti really wanting here? She's probably really wanting just peace and security and fairness and justice. And she may be thinking, the only way I can get that is to kill Indra. But no, there's other ways to get that too. So the problem is when we're thinking, the only way I can have this desire satisfied is to eat that laundryman or to rent that movie or to write this nasty letter to somebody. Nothing else will satisfy me. But it's not a fact. And we're afraid to go to Krishna because we're afraid that the way Krishna is going to satisfy our desire is by smashing us in some way. But that is the way. I mean, if you have this nasty desire and it gets smashed to smithereens, then it's gone. That's not cruelty. That's what we wanted. We want the thing satisfied. We want to feel peaceful. We want to feel, yes, okay, now I have my essential desires fulfilled. Krishna's just going to do it in another way, probably. Or he may also kill your enemy, that may be. He may do that to him. And frankly, Krishna's ways are better than our ways. And Kasyapa's point is, even if you go to Krishna with your material desires in honesty, and somehow you don't come to the point of full transcendence, where you fully see illusion for what it is, still you'll gain something. Still you'll find more satisfaction than you would have found by fulfilling your material desires in a material way, which never leads to satisfaction. So I think we're going to read the deities now. We have 1 minute for questions. Yes, Prabhu?
2 questions.
Probably only got time for one.
Can be false. Why? Why did you say this is ridiculous? Of course I'm not going to fulfill your desire.
Because he already promised.
False, so what?
There is some injunction that promises are not binding when they're harmful, but generally virtuous people, they will only violate their word of honor in very unusual circumstances. Like Krishna directly told Vasudeva, violate your word of honor and don't give me the Kamsa. Because Vasudeva promised all the children to Kamsa. So Krishna personally said, okay, I want you to violate your word of honor. But generally speaking, a virtuous person should find a way to keep their promises and avert harm, like Kasyapa really did. You know, the promises should only be violated when there's absolutely no other option. And it should be a very, very rare thing. We find Dasarath didn't violate his word, for example. All glories to Shiva Prabhupada.